Exempt Chapter 2. I awoke late in the morning. The sun had already risen, shining over the waters of the river. After my shower, I got dressed and went downstairs. Joe the butler is standing there. He said your breakfast is on the porch. Morris was not there, but my place is set. A fresh glass of grapefruit juice is poured. Soon Joe came out with a tray containing a bowl of hot oatmeal with raisins and toasted English muffins spread with butter and strawberry jam. Somebody had taken a great deal of effort to learn my preference of food. Dinner last night and now breakfast served as I would. Just as I had finished my meal, Morris came out. He had been in the library completing letters he had to send is what he told me.
Dickie, I want you to take this card. It contains a private phone number that you can reach me at any time. Do not give this number to anyone, but keep it if an emergency you can reach me.
I took the card and put it in my wallet. Time to hit the road, Morris. I appreciate all you told me, and the opportunity to spend the night in the cottage. I am now off to Yale.
Dickie, I will be in touch. Have a good trip. Go up US-1 to New Haven.
I drove over to Morristown to pick up US-1 and calculated it would take about 3 hours to arrive in New Haven. Since leaving Morris at 9:30 a.m., I should be at the house by 12:30 or 1 p.m. As I drove in silence this Sunday morning, I could not get the discussion of last night out of my head. The sentence I found most troubling was when Morris had said, "Our United States of America." Being an avid reader, I understand words mean something. Why did he say "our United States of America"? Most would say "the United States of America." One thing I learned is that important people use words like weapons. They understand the power each word has. Most people don't consider the meaning or power of a word when using it, but these people are trained. They know words control people. The time was a little past 12 p.m. when I turned off at Church Street in New Haven. Now all I need is to find a house in East Rock. It is easy to follow the direction Uncle Stan gave me. The area has all tree-lined streets. Some houses appear to be built over 100 years ago. Not old looking at all. Some quite grand. You can tell this area was very substantial in its day, and still is what I consider an upper-class neighborhood. The neighborhood looks far more expensive than college students could afford. At Duke, I lived in a dorm with 3 roommates. This is like living in my father's house, except it is going to be my own, or so I thought. I approached the house at 18 Lincoln Street. The house appears to have 4 or 5 bedrooms on the second floor. I cannot tell how large the house is, appearing to be over 3,500 square feet. What do I need for such a large place by myself? The front of the house has a large porch that reminds me in a small way of the Bechtel house in Philadelphia I came from. Not as grand, but the porch has 8 similar Grecian columns surrounding it. The front yard is well kept with a small hedge lining the walkway to the house. The Bradley Street side is where the garage is. I parked in front of the house, looking for the key Uncle Stan sent me. The key is in the envelope, along with the directions and instructions I had put in my overnight bag. Now let's see the inside. Opening the front door, I am shocked. The house looks like a family is living here. The front entrance has a foyer with a staircase leading upstairs. Glass doors on the right side leading to a drawing room, on the left side to the living room. From the living room, you entered the dining room and a large butler's pantry leading into the kitchen. Off the kitchen is a breakfast room or morning room, as Mother would call it. The furnishings are elegant. Nothing I imagined would be this palatial. My word, the president of Yale would be content to reside here. I am feeling a little uncomfortable with all this, and would be happy to have a small apartment in town. Why in the world would I need something like this? At least, I am not paying for it. I went from room to room checking out everything, looking in all the closets, drawers, and cupboards. In the kitchen, the pantry is full of all kinds of food, cereals, oatmeal, flour for pancakes, even my favorite pure maple syrup. Everything I could want is here. Even the refrigerator is stocked, fresh milk, grapefruit juice, butter, eggs, sliced ham, and various cuts of meat. The cupboards are complete with glasses, china for everyday use, along with formal-looking fine china and crystal glasses. I am overwhelmed. Father's house is not so impeccably furnished. I hope he does not get upset when he sees this place. Now, to see upstairs. As I started up the staircase, looking down on me is a large portrait of Uncle Stan. He is watching me even now. That feels a little creepy, but what the heck is his house? The first 2 rooms appear to be guest rooms. Both have their own bathroom. Each is furnished with every detail considered. One room is done in blue and the other in yellow. The bathrooms, even the towels, are coordinated with the theme of the room. There is paper for the toilet. Hand soap by the sink is also blue in one, yellow in the other, even toothpaste on the counter. Someone has gone to a lot of trouble to do all this for me. Why? Down the hall is the master bedroom. The room is about 20 feet by 20 feet with a sitting area next to a fireplace adjacent to a picture window overlooking the rear yard. The bed is a king-size four-poster bed with a solid white comforter cascading to the floor. There are six pillows stacked up that look so comfortable I want to jump right in. This bathroom is all gleaming white, the tiles, the towels, the curtain surrounding the shower and bathtub. Windows on two sides, one overlooking the rear yard, the other looking out to Bradley Street. There is a rear stairway leading to the rear porch, rear yard, and the garage. What I want now is a cup of coffee. In the kitchen, there is a coffee maker with a canister that holds what smells like fresh ground coffee. In a few minutes, the kitchen is filled with the aroma of coffee brewing. It reminds me of the commercial for Aunt Jeremiah pancake mix. Good. I filled my cup with this delight, poured in some fresh cream, went into the morning room to sit at the table and look around. On the table was an envelope that said on the outside, "Welcome to New Haven, Dickey." I opened the envelope with a little trepidation. Inside is a two-page letter from Uncle Stan. It began, "Dickey, you have looked over the house and found everything and more than expected. Your curious mind is asking why he is doing this for me. Correct? I have known your father for many years. He is a good man. He has been helpful to many of us. I have no son of my own, only a stepson. He is a fine person who will be capable of carrying on for me when my time is at an end. I do not know how much time is left, as my health is not as good as it was. We watched over you for many years and believe you will develop into a great leader for the Christian community. Your Lord said in Luke 12:48, 'For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more.' Dickey, you have and will be given much. All that is asked is your loyal services. If I am here to guide or help you, I will do so. If I am not here to guide or help you, another will in my place. You were with Morris last night. He will also be there to assist you in any way possible. Call me anytime you need me. With that understood, I wish you the best as you start this new chapter in your life. Yale will be good to you and for you. Do not become involved in all those clubs and societies at Yale. Those are for ambitious men who need to seek approval and a benefit from others. You do not need such. We would like you to remain pure of heart. Those groups will make your future difficult serving the Christian church. Many of those clubs are not friendly to Christians." This is not the entire text he wrote, but it is the important part. My coffee is cold, so I went into the kitchen to pour another cup and decided it was time to bring in my things from the car. At least, I have an answer to my other question, why am I at Yale? I am here to serve the king or kings. How, I did not know. That will be for later. Today I need to absorb this. I plan to tour Yale Law School today, but don't want to now. Check-in is not until Tuesday with orientation on Wednesday. I'm going upstairs to that comfortable-looking bed, enjoy my coffee, and think. I lay on the bed for 2 hours. It is almost 7:30 p.m., yet I am not hungry. Having put away my clothes and personal items, I went down to the kitchen to enjoy a bowl of cereal, which always has a calming effect. Feeling more relaxed, I went up to the bedroom and made a fire in the fireplace. It has a gas starter and there are wood logs. The small wingback chair by the fireplace provided a warm, comfortable place to plan out my coming day. It is my habit to leave nothing to chance. I prefer to plan my day in full so I accomplish what is needed. Sitting here by the fire, listening to the crackling of the burning wood, smelling the pungent odor of the smoke, I picked up Uncle Stan's letter to reread it. A couple of words bother me. Perhaps I am not clear in their meaning. My concern is similar to when Morris said, "Our United States of America," instead of, "The United States of America." Here, I focused on two words Stan used. First is "we." Who are the "we"? Then the phrase, "Your Lord." He did not say "our Lord" as I would. Words have power, more power than most people understand. Men of power do not use words idly. Even though some questions I had have been answered or discovered, now I have another and quite possibly more important question. I was going to telephone my father and ask him, but this came back to my mind. Morris said, my father had helped them in many ways, but he was not at liberty to tell me. In the letter from Uncle Stan, he also said my father was helpful to us for many years. Father never spoke of any relationship with either Morris or Stan. Is he hiding something from me? This is something I need to find out for myself. Tomorrow I will check in with admissions and look around campus. The sun was peeking through the windows when I awoke at 6 a.m. There is a Yale shuttle schedule on the desk that says I can pick up the shuttle on Whitney at 7:15 a.m. I do not want to drive. It is only a few blocks to the law school campus. If I miss the shuttle, I can walk. By 7 a.m., I dressed, ate a small breakfast, picked up my letter of acceptance, and left. I took a small 35mm camera so I can take pictures to send to friends. This is to them a big deal, Richard at Yale. The admissions office is not open until 9 a.m., giving me over an hour to walk around and take photos. I walked the entire square block from Wall Street to York, back down Grove, to High Street, and returned to the Wall Street entrance. The library in my family home contains thousands of books, including several on architecture. The Gothic style of the Sterling Law Building is to impress and inspire those fortunate enough to attend this great school. Buildings are much like temples to the people who commission them. That is why there is so much symbolism embedded in the architecture. Every facade on the Sterling Law Building is adorned with figures of owls. There is also a statue of a large horned goat. I read extensively on the meaning of symbols used in churches, temples, libraries, government buildings, banks, and other important edifices. Symbols, like words, have meaning, very special meaning, to those who built the buildings, also to many who utilize them. When you see a building with a cross atop, you know it is Christian. When you see a building with the square and compass displayed, you know it is a Masonic organization. Symbols have been in use for millennia in public buildings and monuments such as the Egyptian obelisk found in Washington, D.C. Each symbol has a profound meaning and purpose. The owl holds a significant meaning in occult societies. In medieval times in Western and Central Europe, it was believed owls are actually witches and wizards in disguise. To this day, the owl is considered a witch's familiar. Secret societies consider the owl a symbol of the oracle of secret knowledge. The Skull and Bone Society here at Yale is associated with the Bohemian Club of New York and their Bohemian Grove in California. At the Grove in California stands a giant 40-foot-high concrete owl. That owl is used in all their occult, mock human sacrificial ceremonies. What I understand is owls, and the goat atop the Sterling Law Building is not of Christian origin. Later, I will look into who funded Sterling Law Building. Therein, I will surely find what these symbols allude to. Now it is time to go to the admissions office and get checked in.
Welcome to Yale, are the first words out of her mouth when I handed the admissions clerk my acceptance letter. Then she said, "We are expecting you, Mr. Richard. Dean Rostow asked us to let him know when you arrive. Just a minute, please." Dean Rostow asked if you would stop by his office right after orientation in the morning.
Most certainly, I answered. I thought to myself, why is this person calling me Mr. Richard, and why would the Dean of Yale Law School want to see me?
Sir, would you like a tour of the law school?
Yes, I would. I was around the outside, but not seen the rest.
A young lady came out from an adjacent office. This is Rachel. She will show you around.
Follow me, Rachel said. We will start in the courtyard. We went down a small staircase to the door leading to the law school courtyard. Mr. Richard, here in the courtyard, the students, the faculty, and the staff all use this area to study, meet, and relax. We hold many events here, including the law school picnic, and even classes are held here. Let me show you the table. This is the central meeting place for all the Yale Law School community. I am sure you will spend a lot of time here. Over here on the right is Classroom 127. This is our largest classroom. Many lectures and events are held here. Now let me show you the seminar rooms. These are where first-term small groups meet. Down this hallway is the student lounge where you can meet friends, watch television, or discuss events of the day. Upstairs is the Lillian Goldman Law Library. The library has 6 levels and holds one of the world's largest collections of printed legal materials. You will spend a lot of time here. Here in the main reading room, there are many, many carols to read and study in private. We will go back downstairs and see the Levinson Auditorium. This is the place we hold large law school programs, special events, and some guest lecturers. Now, I will take you to my favorite spot on campus, the dining hall. It is open from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., except Friday, they close at 3:30 p.m. "That is the show," said Rachel. "If you need anything, just call the admissions office and let me know."
"I will. Thank you very much. You made this tour pleasant." Once Rachel left, I went back to the library to take a more in-depth look. Yes, I thought, many questions can be answered here. Tomorrow is orientation day, then the first small classes meet. Orientation went almost as expected. What Yale means, how Yale will affect your future, what Yale expects from you, and how many Yale grads change the world. To be honest, I did not hear most of what was said. I am only thinking about meeting Dean Rostow and what he wants with me. As I approached room 104, the office of the dean, I wondered if something was wrong. Uncle Stan and my father had taken care of all the details. I had not even read most of what they provided.
The assistant sitting behind the desk said, "You must be Richard."
"Yes, I am."
"Have a seat. Dean Rostow will be with you in a moment," she replied.
A buzzer sounder on her desk. "You can go in now," she smiled as she told me. I read up on Dean Rostow, who is an academic giant. When I met him in person, he was all the more impressive. Here is a man who knew what he wanted and how to get it. He looks like what you would envision as a Supreme Court justice.
"Come in, Richard. Take a seat. I am told a lot about you. All good things, I might add. You must be concerned why I asked you to come in."
"Yes, sir. I am a little anxious about that."
"Stan, your Uncle Stan, as you refer to him, is fond of you. He believes that your fine character, along with your brilliant intellect and your steadfast determination, will enable you to be a great leader for the Christian community. He said you will make Yale proud one day. I trust his judgment. We at Yale will do all we can to help you grow. I trust your time here will inspire you to reach high. Stan is one of the most powerful men in this nation, and the world for that matter. He and his associates control the finances of this country and most of the world. Money is power. Without it, Yale would not be able to train the leaders of tomorrow. Stan has high expectations of you, which is why he is personally funding the cost of your time at Yale. Don't let him or Yale down. Do your best. All the resources you need are here. I asked Professor Manning to mentor you. He is absolutely brilliant. Listen to him, work hard, and apply yourself. You will find the environment here different from Duke. We do not put a lot of emphasis on classroom time. You can study and work wherever you are most comfortable. I am familiar with the house you occupy. It is a special environment to learn, quiet and comfortable. Are there any questions you have of me?"
"No, sir. I am thankful to be here. What I want to do is get out of there and go to the house. This day has been more than expected or wished for. Nothing is as it seems." "Richard," someone called out as I was leaving the office. I turned and Dean Rostow's assistant said,
"Your small group is set to meet shortly in room 108. Do you know where that is?"
"Yes, thank you." Rachel had shown me these rooms yesterday. It was no trouble to find. The door is open and there are 16 students chatting away when the professor enters, saying, "Now the fun begins." Once we all went through the perfunctory introductions, exchanged names and where we came from, the professor said,
"I am Manning. Professor Manning to you. I will start you out today. After this, your regular schedule will begin. First, I would like to ask each of you one question. Why are you here? Who wants to start?" When he said that, I turned my head sharply toward him. He must think I wanted to speak because he said, "Okay, you go first," pointing to me. "What is your name?"
"Richard," is all that came out.
"You are from Duke, correct?"
"Yes, sir," I replied.
"Well, go on. Why are you at Yale Law School?"
"That is to be determined," is my answer. I could feel and see all the other new students looking at me in silence as if they did not know if they should laugh or not. Professor Manning was silent for a moment, looking at me intently, and said,
"That is one of the best answers I have heard to that question. None of us can see the future. We only know we are on a path to greater understanding and purpose. Most of you have plans and dreams of where this journey will lead. Some hope to join great law firms. Many desire to be political leaders. Others want to change the world. Whatever your dreams and aspirations, the end will be determined by your actions and the people you surround yourself with. Here at YLS, we value creativity in law, not the usual rote reading of cases, then retaining them in memory. What we want to see is how you think. How would you plead a case?
Let me assign you an example case to plead. Here, in this case, the city of Moore, just a name, folks, through their redevelopment agency, filed an eminent domain action to acquire a small family farm. This farm has been in the same family for over 95 years. The property is surrounded by both residential and commercial properties. A large developer proposed to the city the taxes received from this farm are inconsistent with the needs of the city treasury. They submitted a large development that will bring in new tax revenues of over $225,000 per year. The city council approved the proposal. Now all they need is the land. You have been retained by the property owners to fight this action. They do not want to sell at any price. Each of you can pick up a copy of the complaint on the table by the door. You have until next Monday to bring me your response. I went upstairs to the library, checked out 4 books, and went home to study. I read cases in circuit courts of the state, State Court of Appeals, Federal Courts, Federal Appeals, even Supreme Court cases. From what I read, it will be difficult to prevent the city from taking the property. Most cases hinge on the amount of money to be paid for the property, not to prevent the authority from taking. Professor Manning said clearly the owners do not want to sell at any price. I reread the complaint and all the accompanying documents. In reading the deed, this 40-acre property was deeded to a former slave family in 1865. The farm has been in their family since. Wow. I now have the answer. How to save the farm. This is not going to be a civil eminent domain action. It is going to be a civil rights action and perhaps the largest case to date. I understand how to accomplish this. We won't waste time and the owner's money fighting the city. We will attack the city and make them capitulate. The Civil Rights Act of 1960 was just signed into law on May 6th this year by President Eisenhower. It appears to ensure the rights of colored Americans to vote. The law is new. I am certain this can be a hot potato issue. Federal judges will most certainly expand the purpose to include all civil rights. The colored population is now assured their voting rights. Both political parties will be fighting for their vote. The vote of the colored population can swing the power in many of the southern, midwestern, and eastern states. City of Moore. Watch out, we are coming. I see these 6 means to unify different groups to defeat the city of Moore. Moore. Against Moore, so to speak. File a civil rights lawsuit in federal district court. B. Rally prominent lawyers with an interest in civil rights. They will file amicus briefs in support. C. Bring the case to the attention of Reverend Martin Luther King and other civil rights activists. This is just the kind of publicity they will relish. Rallies can be held outside the farm, drawing national attention. D. Bring in a publicist to bring all these forces together. E. Have more liberal columnists write stories for the New York Times, the Washington Post, etc. Many others will pick it up. The nation will rally to the farmer's defense. F. The presidential election season is upon us. Contact the campaign staff of each candidate. Let them understand the political implications for their candidate. The candidate who jumps in first will collect the reward, votes. This campaign has the winning edge, public opinion. The best part is it will not cost a dollar. All parties have a purpose to contribute their time and skills. More important, civil rights will become the major issue it should be, both in the courts and the public arena. Monday morning, I turned in my response to the complaint to Professor Manning. He is collecting one from each student. Manning took them to his desk and read each paper. I watched as he only glanced at some of the work, even though many seemed like 10-page documents. I must have got this wrong, as I had written only 1 page. Manning is reading my paper, I can tell, as it is the only 1-page answer given. He sat there pondering something, then looked up at me and said,
"Richard, come here, please."
Darn it. My first week at YLS, and I am on the shit list already. I almost stumbled over the chair of the fellow sitting next to me as I walked forward, trying not to look at anyone, but I could sense all staring at me. "Richard, I want you to read this to the class," as he handed me my paper. My first thought is he was trying to embarrass me. Well, he did a good job of it. I stood before the class, all quiet, as they do not understand what this is about either, and read my text. Finished. I looked around the room for a response from someone. Finally,
Manning said to the class, "Does anyone have comments?"
The fellow that was sitting next to me got up and said, "Professor, I think that is brilliant. I wish I had seen it so simple."
John Ely is his name. I remember from last week when we all made introductions. Now I will never forget him. Professor Manning then turned to the class and said,
You all did wonderful work, but most missed the keywords. They do not want to sell at any price. Remember what I told you the other day. At Yale, we value creativity in law. You all got hits, to use a baseball analogy. However, Richard, hit it out of the park. Now, I will let you in on a secret. This is not a mock case. This case was sent to us to see if we can help this family. Richard, the staff will prepare the federal court complaint you will review before it is filed. You are assigned to do the rest. You made an outline. Go do it. You can either work from home or Yale. That is up to you. I want you to clear it all with me. We will assist in locating the law firms and law professors to add support through filing amicus briefs. They will line up to do that. We will assist in finding the best public relations firm that would love the publicity this case will bring. It is likely some of our students have family in the news business. Query them and enlist their help. Moore is not the name of the actual city involved in this case. Here are the details. I took the papers from him and went to sit down. Richard, you cannot win this case sitting in that chair. Go to work and report each day. Stunned. Would sum up as how I felt. I never wanted to attend law school, but now I love it.
Before leaving YLS for my house, I went to the library to find everything they have in Danville, Virginia, the site of this case. Nothing looks interesting. I might as well go to the house to conduct research. Father will know the pastor of the Methodist Church in Danville. That is the best place to start. Local pastors are familiar with everyone in their community who is pulling the strings of power. I have not spoken to Father since I arrived at Yale. There is much to talk about as I dialed the phone. Hello, Father answered. Father, how are you and Mother?
It's about time you called, he said, somewhat grumpily.
Father, this first week has been unbelievable. Professor Manning assigned me a case to prepare. I believe this will be a milestone in the civil rights movement.
What did you say, civil rights? Explain. Why would anyone assign you a case? You have only been there a few days.
That is what makes this so exciting. I explained in detail all that had transpired in the last few days, along with the details of the case. When I told Father the case is centered in the city of Danville, Virginia, he is silent for a time. Then he said,
Richard, Danville is a hotbed right now. Reverend William Watkins of the Mount Vernon Methodist Church in Danville is a friend. We discussed events in the city, how they are affecting his church and the other churches. It is not good, I tell you. This past April, Danville almost had riots in the streets. Some Negro high school students tried to use the Danville Memorial Library. This is not allowed in a segregated town, and they are refused entrance. The city, rather than let the incident escalate, closed the library. I hear the Negroes organized and filed a federal civil rights case against the city that is not resolved yet.
Father, I want to go to Danville to meet with Pastor Watkins. Will you please phone him to let him know I am coming to meet him?
Richard, I will on one condition. You are not to let anyone in Danville learn why you are there. Tensions are running high there. I do not want trouble for you or Pastor Watkins. Do not use his name unless he allows you to. Is that understood?
I will leave in the morning. Please tell him I should be there on Wednesday. I better phone Professor Manning and clear this with him. Hello, Professor Manning. This is Richard.
Yes, Richard. How can I help you?
I need to go to Danville to meet with William Watkins, pastor of Mount Vernon Methodist Church. My father knows him and is arranging for me to see him. He will provide the contacts I need for this case. There is much more to this case than appears on the surface, but I should be able to find answers. It should take me 2 days down and 2 days back. I will be in class next Monday. Is that okay?
That sounds reasonable. Keep track of your expenses. We will see you are reimbursed. Have a good trip.